as I said, I just want to get this out of the way right away and just say RIP to Roger Ailes, you know, and like out of respect for his family, I would just like to encourage you guys and the rest of the listeners not to just, you know, think about his now, his bloated, moldering, now certainly stiffening corpse just lying on a slab somewhere. Definitely don't think about that. Don't laugh about it or dance on his grave.
Texturally, or, you know, it's very interesting because rigor mortis is setting in, but also he's very squishy. So it's both soft and hard. He's like a stress ball.
Oh, yeah. It's like when museums like wire up octopus.
Like a burrito.
Oh, sorry. Did I mention we're joined by Libby Watson? Hello, Libby.
Hello.
It's your chapo for this week. Let's start the show. And again, just start the show properly by showing respect to Roger Ailes and bringing up the fact that in legal documents, a woman referred to his genitals as looking red like raw hamburger meat.
Mm. Oh, no.
I mean, like, we can remember him a variety of ways. And, you know, like, as a raconteur, a brilliant broadcaster and producer, as Tina Brown said, or just like a breathing turd, just like expanding, huffing, and bloating his way towards making this country almost infinitely stupider and more cruel over his career. Bye, Roger. Sorry.
Pretty crazy thing. Chris Cornell also died. And wow, looks like I wasn't getting the two mixed up all those years. They were the same person.
Both of them are going through the black hole sun right now.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So,
black hole sun. In my office, I like to come.
It's your chapo for this week, as I mentioned, joined by a friend of the show, Libby Watson. Also, as always, Felix Peterman.
Hello, everyone.
Amber Lee Frost.
Howdy.
And Brendan James.
Hey, everybody.
You already know me. It's your boy, Will Miniker. So, pretty busy week in the news department. Not to spend too long in it, but this has been, a Trump week. My man stays in the headlines, stays being funny. I'm just going to run at the top of my head some of the things that happened since we last broadcast. Apparently, Trump inadvertently or just ignorantly shared classified intelligence with a Russian diplomat in the Oval Office.
No, wait. It wasn't just intelligence. It was Israeli intelligence. Do you know how hard they worked to get that? Do you know how many children they beat up?
Let's see what else is going on.
Well, he tried to land on the Masada holy site in Israel with a helicopter.
Well, they denied him the ability to do that, so he just canceled the trip.
Exactly.
He heard that he could still do it if he couldn't land the helicopter on top, and then said, well, then I'm not doing it, and canceled
it. He's going to be our...
Oh, my God, I love it. He's such a diva.
I would pay so much money to hear that conversation where someone explained to him that he can't do that.
This is what's going to make him anti-Zionist. Yeah. He's going to... Edward Said, a great guy who people are recognizing more. We're going to be hearing that name more and more. I was the first person to invent Orientalism.
Oh, also, apparently... told James Comey to take it easy on his boy Michael Flynn because he's a good man.
Yeah.
And sent a text to Michael Flynn saying, stay strong.
Stay strong. Yeah.
Michael, I did it. I think I just took care of it. I told the FBI guy not to investigate you. No one ever thinks of that.
And that guy Mueller is now the new acting.
Special counsel, I guess.
Yes. The libs are all in a histrionic tizzy about getting Donald Trump fired.
Yeah.
Because they think that would improve the situation somehow?
Well, that is the question. And I remember, you know, in our first post-election episode, I asked the question knowing full well that I should give up predicting anything about what's going to happen in the future vis-a-vis Donald Trump. But it's getting increasingly hard for me to imagine he even finishes out this year, let alone his first term in office. Like, it's just like, how does this keep going on?
I could see him resigning out of boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think we've learned that Democrats are extremely ineffective. The impeachment process would be hamstrung by just the amount of Republicans in power. And also, like, I don't know. I think that maybe it's better to have an incompetent fascist in charge than...
Absolutely.
Than Pence.
I'm agnostic on it, but I did hear someone today making a pretty cogent case that, I don't know if it persuaded me, but that Trump going down would unequivocally be a bad, at least PR hit for the Republicans, that their president got taken down, and that if the left didn't try to co-opt that and say this is a victory for us. And I'm not talking about the resistance. I'm talking about the actual left to actually rejoice in it and push even further, obviously, once that had happened. That could be a pretty good thing. I want him to
keep being president at least another couple years, because I feel like if he gets impeached now, certainly the Republicans will take the blow, but keep in mind they will immediately be congratulated and thanked by the media for being serious adults.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And people will love Pence for being like a very serious kind of Republican too, and they'll try and be like, well, this is actually the face of the Republican Party.
Do you remember when, like, those headstones in Jewish cemeteries started being smashed, and Trump, like, of course, when they asked Trump about it, he's like, what if people, the Jews, are doing it as a joke? But, like,
to be fair, they are comedic people historically.
It's a vaudeville joke when you blow up a headstone.
Feel like
take my wife, boom.
Feel like you're right. I do remember what you did on Halloween last year.
That classic borscht belt bit.
Yeah. It was a tribute to my grandfather, Henny Youngman. But so, like, Trump just, like, vomited out of his mouth. But Pence, because he's, like, more of an establishment Republican, and he's more the style of Republican who's like, I'm grateful for our Jewish Americans who Jewish, Israel, best kind of Jew, Hanukkah Jew, Israel, IDF Jew. And he, like, went to a synagogue and, like, hugged people.
Yeah, he's like a classic evangelical Christian.
Exactly. Evangelicals think that Jews are, like, alternatively some, like, crazed group of perverts, but also, like, magical.
If you rub their head, it's, like, lucky.
Yeah. Well, they're like elves in Lord of the Rings. My dad was
We think they're, like, Smurfs, and, like, and, like, Gargamel is, like, the Arab world, and then, like, the cat is, like, all of Europe. Yeah. I mean, so, like, we like them for utilitarian purposes, but, like, we don't like them.
Yeah,
like,
you wouldn't
them.
Like, you wouldn't hang out with, like, most types of Jews.
Yeah,
but the kind.
But
like,
we have this
Hamilton.
Idea that they're, like, living in tents in the desert still, and we really like that. And they're not just being like, oh, we go to beach, we go to discotheque. Like, their idea of Israel is amazing.
When that happened, people were like, "It's finally an honorable man," and it's like he's still like. He's still, like, fucking makes gay kids play Operation.
I think that's where there would be the most, like, mainstream hatred and disapproval of him, is that, okay, well, we got rid of the racist nationalists, but now we have the transphobic, homophobic, voodoo science
hardcore
guy.
Religious fundamentalist.
Yeah, I think he would still be
also,
pretty hated.
I think he's very competent. Yes. I mean, as someone who came from Indiana, he's a killer.
Yeah. Just a couple other things. Like, in the news that was breaking about, like, this quote that Comey has, you know, memos, that he has paper on Donald Trump, the most scandalous thing in that article was actually not that Trump was asking him to maybe take it easy on my boy, but that he also suggested that the FBI start arresting journalists.
Oh, yeah.
I have to see what journalist he has in mind before I can fully come out against this.
Yeah. I would have to vet this before fully condemning it. Yeah.
Well, I like the idea that there are, you know, leakers in the White House who are, you know, letting the public, you know, filling us in courageously and anonymously, blowing the whistle on the Trump administration. I hope all of them still get prosecuted ruthlessly and sent to jail for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's hypocritical, but hey. These are the times we live in.
I don't know. I think we could, like, give them some kind of deal where, like, we spare their lives.
They could commit seppuku.
Yeah, we won't.
They have to wear.
It won't be a public execution. Mm-hmm. Their families can have some dignity.
What about this? If they confessed all their crimes and expropriate all their assets to the proletariat, their punishment is that they have to wear a child Sailor outfit and lick a big lolly forever. That's fun for everyone.
We'll be talking about Brett Stevens in just a little bit.
Oh, before we get to that, I do want to bring up our boy. Our boss was in town recently.
Oh, yeah?
Our boy Tayep.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Our boy Tayep.
Libby, you're in D.C. Were you assaulted by any AKP goons or Chapo Trap House listeners, as we like to think of them?
No, actually, but I never leave the house, so.
The boys are back in town.
Hey, you,
bad-looking Kurd, get over here. I love this. So we found out today.
Bad to the bone starts playing at the Brookings Institute.
Erdogan's guard. There were some Yazidis and Kurds protesting outside of like a think tank where Erdogan was speaking, and Erdogan like personally told them to beat the shit out of them, which is amazing because he's the leader of a country of millions, and he just sees like 24 old men. He's like, "Fuck that!" Just,
like, that man shook.
Yeah,
you think the guy's a bit insecure?
Little bit.
Yeah,
I think it would be good to like next time he's in town, like because they're gonna assault people no matter what, and they'll never actually get prosecuted for a billion reasons. You know, they're a key NATO ally. But, like, to tell them that the Proud Boys are a pro-Kurd group.
Or, like, imagining guys rattling off breakfast cereals as actual gray wolf fascists just, like, fucking stomp their teeth in. And then, I guess, like, just going back to my other favorite news item that came out this week was the Washington Post had a report about a recording of a meeting of House Republicans where I think, Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy, he's one of the majority leaders. Yeah. Apparently said, you know, in this closed meeting, I think Putin is paying two of us, Trump and Dana Rohrabacher. And then
Wait, I didn't hear about this? No.
And then Paul Ryan was immediately like, ha ha ha, guys, but seriously, nobody leaked from this meeting. Yeah. We're all family. And Paul Ryan literally said, quote, we're all family and that's how you know, no leaks. And then, like, there is nervous laughter is reported on the tape. The Washington Post has a copy of this. And they asked the counsel, Paul Ryan's counsel, is this baby-faced fucking, you know, like, the thick of it looking character named Brendan Buck?
Yes.
And then when asked, he was just like, in no way, like, to imply that, you know, Speaker McCarthy would ever say that about Donald Trump is simply ludicrous. It never happened. And then the Washington Post was like, we're going to be running a story based on a recording of this meeting. He was just like, comments made a year ago, clearly in jest, that were clearly meant as a joke. Ha ha, people were laughing on the tape. And what I love about that is it's believable because that is such a bad joke, and Republicans are congenitally so bad at being funny,
yeah,
that it's almost believable.
Yeah. Well, I like that they're going, I was being ironic. Like, they're going the straight, like, defend the tweet route.
They're taking our fucking line.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chapo Trapas defense. Yeah. No, his tweet about it was amazing afterwards as well, because, like, everyone was saying, hey, bitch, you lied to a reporter. And then his tweet was, goodness, I don't lie, period. What was presented to me originally was far different than what they ultimately presented, an obvious joke. I just love that he started his defense with goodness, like he's some kind of southern grandma.
Oh, golly gee.
I may not be big city lawyer, but I know one thing. What the boys say in private is nothing but joking and hassling.
He was actually dictating the tweet so that he could have both thumbs for his yeah.
Now I just may be a small town retard.
So that's funny.
I may wear a propeller hat. I may have a lollipop actually sticking to my bottom.
I remember my grandmama saying to me, boy, there's more water in your head than the Mississippi.
She said, boy, you could roll a quarter down your brain. That's how smooth it is. I forget what my point is, but
Paul Ryan is not a liar. Neither am I. So that's hilarious. They continue to be funny. And the last thing I want to mention on our just roundup of the week's quick hits news is, you'll remember in our most recent episode, our charming cold open, the parody TV trailer, Fresh Connection, the Jared Fogle becomes director of the FBI story. And I got to say, once again, reality following our curve, the only person more repellent than Jared Fogle is being floated for director of FBI.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm talking about the melted-faced golem that is Joe Lieberman. He's back, everybody! Joe Mentum!
A lot of people don't know this, but Joe Lieberman also lost 380 pounds.
That's why his skin is so loose. Mm-hmm. Like the
yeah,
around
that's
his
why you can use his
jowls.
Neck as a fleshlight.
So, good luck to director Lieberman. Yeah. I think that's great.
Yeah, we're all rooting for you. Yeah.
I'm really hoping to see him back prominently in American politics.
I hope he gets into the office and, like, all the documents with his name on them, it's like triple parentheses, Mr. Director.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, this is not going to make the Pepes happy, just like I'm sure all those, you know, Goldman Sachs types weren't making the Pepes happy.
I am enjoying the kind of slow, I haven't been keeping up on it as much as I would like, but I ask for reports from like Angela Nagel, who is on the Pepe beat,
sure,
and they feel very betrayed.
Yeah, they're
I think a lot of them
thought
are
we had something.
They're sort of tuning out, and I think a lot of them are just like going full on for just complete nihilism. And
black
just,
pill, baby.
Yeah. Woo. Just like hoping for the end of the world at this point.
We should have Angela back on soon to check in with the.
Yeah,
the
I want to talk about her book.
She's going to be back in literally a few weeks to promote the book.
I have
she's
going to be Chapo here. Preview.
Yeah, enjoy that.
I have a lot of Pepes like follow me and are alternatively like when I tell like a non-political joke, they're like, "Oh, I play Battlefield 2. That's pretty funny."
Yeah, no, some of them followed me,
yeah.
And they would be like, "You're a very attractive mongoloid. It's like, you have a lot of issues."
But but every time I tweet about politics, they just hate it. It's they're like, "You'd be cool if you weren't a kike and you were racist." It's like, well, one of those things I can't change. Can work on the other one, I guess. I could do some personal growth in my racism.
If you could call that living.
Yeah, moving on. That's our quick hit news roundup. Before we move on, we have a trifecta of a reading series to get to that are pretty good. But before we do, we're going to have some actual informed commentary. Libby, you volunteered to libsplain the latest FCC ruling on net neutrality.
Yeah, I really have to get a website called Libsplain. So basically, the FCC had a vote today to it's not the end of the process, but to begin the process on repealing net neutrality rules. I think, you know, probably most people know what net neutrality is, but, you know, just in case, basically, it's the principle that your internet service provider can't limit can't prioritize the traffic on your network differently, so you know they can't slow down your access to Netflix or you know as these companies start to absorb ever more companies that create content, like let's say AT&T buying DirecTV, they can't make it easier, make it faster to access those websites rather than their competitors. And, you know, those rules were passed in 2015 under Obama. And since Ajit Pai has been chairman of the FCC, he's been going hog wild on getting rid of those and a lot of other good rules. So that's what happened today. It's not really clear whether his proposal will actually, you know, survive a legal challenge. So it's possible that what, you know, he and the ISPs are really hoping will happen is that Democrats in Congress will be like dumb and cowardly enough to make a deal with Republicans on a shitty piece of legislation in the next couple of years, which hopefully they won't be. But, you know,
I'll take action on that proposition right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you can like set your watch to it. So that's basically what's happening right now.
An idea to maybe slightly slow down the stranglehold with which several giant media conglomerates are able to control everything that happens on the internet, and that of course is going away.
Right, and it's like it's one of these things that's sort of it becomes more and more relevant as when we all had 1 megabyte a second internet or dial up or whatever. It's like, you know, that's one thing, but now that our internet is so fast, it does make a difference. If you know, we expect stuff to load really quickly, and we expect to have multiple devices on one network and be able to watch Netflix and use Twitter at the same time and stuff. So, you know, it does become more relevant, and also becomes more relevant as the biggest ISPs seek to kind of buy up these and merge with these companies that create content. And so, you know, in my lefty opinion, I don't think you really want, you know, a couple of big companies controlling both the means of providing content and the content itself. Doesn't seem great to me. But yeah, and you know, obviously, it's one of these issues where it's like no one who doesn't work for Verizon or Comcast really would possibly ever like be opposed to net neutrality. If you explain it to someone, they're like, oh yeah, obviously they shouldn't be able to limit traffic based on the websites you're going to. But like, because it's DC and there's an echo chamber and it's, you know, these companies are like some of the biggest spenders on lobbying, you know, in the country, it becomes this sort of fake echo chamber in DC where there's like all of these guys pumping out stupid shitty op-eds and like founding these astroturf nonprofits and stuff, and they're even like someone is even filing like hundreds of thousands of fake comments with the FCC using real people's names. Like they got some list of real people's names and addresses and email addresses and filed like 400,000 fake comments opposing net neutrality, or rather like supporting Ajit Pai's proposal to get rid of it. And these people had no idea. Like I called a couple of them and they were like, what? No, I mean, I've never even heard of the FCC. I've never heard of net neutrality. So it's like getting a bit dirty. But it's one of these things that's like so procedural and technical. It's like, you know, it's hard to get people to care. And the FCC hasn't said if they will even like try to stop that. Because if that wasn't happening, like the comments, you know, would be massively, massively in favor of net neutrality as they were last time they did this, when it was like a record setting number of comments. They're really scared that that's going to happen again. And there's going to be like 5 million comments in favor of net neutrality. And then Ajit Pai is going to have to say, well, we looked at the comments and we're still going to get rid of it. So that's, I guess, why they're doing this, but it's pretty fucking shady.
Libby, asking for a friend, how could this potentially affect pornography?
That's a good question. Because like, so the point with net neutrality is supposed to be that you can't block lawful content. So if you get rid of net neutrality, there is this threat that you would either be able to like set up networks where you can't get to pornography, or
well, there's our campaign right there.
Right, immediately.
That's how you fight this. That's how you rally the troops.
We do not want to go back to the bad old days of waiting 5 to 10 minutes for a single image to buffer, not even knowing what the image is.
Right. Devil's advocate that I will play for the FCC. We don't have a sense of community anymore. Children used to congregate in the woods and dig up issues of Playboy and
one
jack off
crunchy
to
a unbendable issue of yeah. Playboy.
Dig up a close up of a woman's bush from 1973 and all jack off to it. And when we used to jerk off as friends, you know, gone are the days of the movie Autofocus. Now it's just all cold and alone. This is the new Fight Club. It's about a group of guys who jack off together.
What is the famous
That was the old Fight Club.
What's the famous sociological study, like bowling alone?
Oh, yeah.
Drinking
yeah,
alone.
Yeah.
This is a messer of how our society has atomized and fractured.
Yeah, that's the new introvert extrovert
type. I guess someone should ask Ajit if he's like a no-fap guy, and if that's like what this is all about. He's just like trying to bring us back to the good old days where we didn't jerk off constantly. Maybe
He's a proud boy. He's a proud boy.
He's a proud boy, right?
Yeah.
It is interesting. He's kind of been like, it's, you know, while he was on the FCC before, and you know, in that time and in the past few months, he's kind of been pretending to be like, oh, I'm a fun, adorable guy, and like I'm just, you know, I'm, oh geez, and you know, like trying to be likable. And then since the net neutrality stuff started, he's been like going on all these insane right wing media, you know, shows. He's been on the Lars Larson show, and he went on Breitbart and like, you know, gave an interview to them, and like went to Freedom Works and shit. So he's like really going hard on the like worst people. So a lot of people think that he might want to run for office after he's done in the FCC, because like why else would you go and talk to those people?
Libby, didn't he try to do some cutesy like viral bit where like you read like hate tweets about yourself for the FCC?
Benny Johnson.
Oh, our boy Benny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, old school enemy. He like did one of those, you know, reads mean tweets things. And even that he kind of fucked up. He made some weird joke about like when women get, you know, when I get out of prison, women are the same age or whatever, as if he's like trying to fuck underage girls. Yeah, it's fucking weird.
You luck Fogel.
Feeling like Fogel at the FCC.
It was a variation on the Matthew McConaughey line from Dazed and Confused.
Right, he referenced
but about
that,
going
but like
to jail.
He didn't deliver it well, as you might imagine, because like these people aren't real.
He's like, that's so... what I love about doing 3 to 5 for sexual battery. I get out and the girls stay the same age.
Yeah, that is not true at all, though. That does not work.
It's not how time works.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how time works. And, like, why would you say that?
So, yeah, this guy's an asshole, and get ready for the internet to suck. Remember when we were in Pittsburgh and it took us 4 hours to watch one Steven Seagal movie?
That was dark.
That's the future, okay? So I want to move on now, and I want to sort of do a follow-up on the episode we did about 2 weeks ago now, I think, our official I Hate the New York Times episode, by doing a follow-up and hating on the New York Times some more. We mentioned on that show, like, this, so what kicked that off was talking about the hiring of Brett Stevens to the New York Times op-ed page, and a lot of the bullshit excuses and defenses made by the Times public editor and op-ed page editor and Stevens himself about why his completely banal and, like, you know, stock conservative opinions are worthy of being aired as some sort of unique and challenging voice. I said on that show that it wasn't even worth talking about his first column about global warming because it was so fucking boring. But Brett has turned something in that is worth talking about, in that it's even more just lazy, trite, and just standard. Like, it's a piece that could be written by any blog commentator circa 2004. And what's even more incredible about it is it's just a reprint of a commencement address he gave at an all-male college in Southern Virginia. So New York Times really getting what they're paying for. But first, I want to do two quick follow-ups on our other boys from the New York Times, David Brooks and Ross Douthat. You may remember from David Brooks the last time we discussed him, we were talking about his wedding registry and his most recent nuptials to his research assistant, 23 years his junior. Once again, shout out to friend of the show, I Hate NYT, Emily.
Yeah.
Who cued me into this amazing fucking detail that I had to confirm because I couldn't fucking believe it was true. In David Brooks's first marriage, he made his wife change not her last name and convert to Judaism and change her last name. Fair enough. Standard. Everybody does it. He made her change her first name.
What the fuck?
Libby, were you aware of this?
Gorilla mindset, baby.
No, I really want to know what she had to... Please okay. Say that she had to change her name to David Brooks.
This is in his Wikipedia page. Brooks met his ex-wife, the former Jane Hughes, while both were students at the University of Chicago. She converted to Judaism and changed her given name to Sarah.
Oh wait, that actually does happen. Like,
this is this a thing?
Because Jane is so goyish.
Yeah.
Well, Joe Lieberman, like, he divorced his first wife for like not being Jewish enough, which is like, how did you not figure that out until you married her?
So like,
yeah, then he married his new wife, and she was like adequately Jewish, but he was like, oh, can you change your name? And she changed it to like Hadassah, which is like,
oh my god,
that's like a name that a Nazi would make to make fun of Jews. That's like not a real name.
But yeah, like, that's a Sturmer kind of like stand-in name.
I'm Hadassah Menorah.
I just like, I don't know. This is, I honestly, I had never ever heard of someone changing their first name for a marriage, but
the worst.
Yeah, look,
Jews do it.
We don't like to judge women's choices here, but if I'm ever either converting or changing my name, please call the police because I am being held captive.
I want to marry a Hotep woman, and I have to change my name to like Ankh Ramansah.
IQ perfection.
Yeah.
But here's my question: is she going by Jane again?
Yeah, or is she hanging on to the Judaism? Because, I mean, apparently, a lot of times when someone converts for a marriage, a lot of times when a woman converts for a marriage, she keeps the religion even after the divorce, especially if there were children. Because it's like a cultural touchstone or whatever.
It's called the Walter Subcheck.
But that's like, I married David Brooks, and all I got was this lousy Jewish-ass name.
she's now in a post-grunge alternative band. She used that sorrow from the divorce to spur her music. It's called Jane's Circumcision.
I saw the gears turning as you were waiting to say that.
Slumps over, baby. Yeah.
And then just real quick follow-up on our boy Boss Ross. I just noticed today he was using the death of Roger Ailes as an excuse to once again hump the vampirous corpse of William F. Buckley as he going to the end of two great eras of conservative journalism, William Buckley and Roger Ailes. May the next one be more like the first. And I was like, what? Openly supporting Jim Crow apartheid and forcibly tattooing HIV positive men? Yeah, Ross, let's return to those good old days. So, yeah, Ross, just still on the sailboat with Ducky.
Mm.
We're on our way now.
Coiled potency. Yep. May it rain a thousand years.
From beyond the grave.
Yeah.
The potency, it's coiled.
It's really sad. You have to wonder about like his relationship with his dad for him to be so obsessed.
Oh, that's 90% of the show.
Yeah.
We read his memoir, but maybe we didn't read that part that carefully.
His dad doesn't really show up very much in the
it's
memoir.
His mom.
That's what I'm saying.
It's the weird ailments that she got as she was giving birth to Ross that subsided immediately after, but that bore a very ominous sign for what he would do in
his,
the world.
His mom was Alma Garrett, and his dad was Seth Bullock.
I like
he's
that.
He's never around.
I like that. Yeah. Well, as we previously discussed, his mom was Rosemary's baby.
Yeah.
Was the mother.
Yeah.
It's all for you, Ross. Okay, but back to Brett Stevens, because like I said, he turned in a column that was just a commencement address. And, like, by the way, commencement addresses are already, like, the absolute worst form of writing.
They're super stupid.
They're awful.
They should just be abolished. Because they become so politically contentious, and it's just like, don't fucking have them.
And, again, this is so what the topic of his commencement address was: safe spaces. Would you believe how cutting edge this conservative mind is? See how much he's challenging the New York Times readers?
Right.
I bet no one expected a fucking middle-aged conservative to get all a bug up his ass about college
safe spaces. Right, and what university was this?
This was an all-male university in Southern Virginia that is incredibly conservative.
So
I think they're
literally absolutely a safe space where no one has to request a safe space because it is a safe space for those loser nerds.
There was actually a campus Brooks Brothers riot at Hampton, Sydney on the night Obama was reelected in 2012. And like 40 bow ties were like, you know, like chanting, and four of them were arrested or expelled or something.
Oh my God.
I think
my
vagina just died.
The Hampton, Sydney team is known as just the bow ties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Historic institution.
ISIS is right. Like, they have some. I don't totally agree with their methods, but they kind of have a point.
But by the way, so he uses this commencement address to rail against safe spaces. But as Amber rightly pointed out, an all male university, the ultimate safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the South, right? Yeah. Conservative. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right out the Raytheon Acres, Virginia.
Right. It's like so safe. They literally never have to see a titty.
Yeah.
Yes.
The term safe space was actually invented in all male British upper class prep schools. You know, the kind of where colonialism, the kind that Brett Stevens practices.
Yeah,
was
it's
born.
Like an old Eton term. You
yeah.
know, like how they call the younger boys fags or whatever. It's
well, that's
it's
that's
like
what
those.
A safe space is. It's the inside of a younger boy in a British boarding school.
So back to Stevens. Okay, let's dip into this god awful and just utterly boring, banal commencement address. Members of the class of 2017, congratulations. Very soon, you will hold in your hands the diploma of a great and storied college. Storied, like last in the national news for having a race riot when Obama was reelected. Very soon, you'll be gone from this gorgeous campus, this nurturing, stimulating, protective environment, a place that, in a manner of speaking, has been your safe space these past few years. So let me ask you, are you ready, really ready, to leave this safe space? I've been thinking a lot about safe spaces lately. So, like, yeah, he's introducing this topic like anyone isn't familiar with it, and he just goes, I mean, like, it goes on and on.
That's long for a New
it's
York
fucking
Times
long, yeah.
Oh, because it's
not
like really
just
a
reprint, yeah.
I'd also just like to point out, I just Googled it, and I know that these rankings are bullshit or whatever, but he said it's a great and storied college, but it's, like, 105th in liberal arts colleges overall, which is, like, not it's neither great nor storied. It has a score of 53 out of 100 on US News, so that doesn't sound much, like, it doesn't sound very good to me.
Felix, you want to know what the motto is?
Oh, no, tell me.
come here as boys so you may leave as men.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
You can't make this up. Follow-up.
Is this where Teddy Roosevelt did his goody good boys speech?
To be a goody good boy.
So
I can't, they're still doing this in 2017. They're still doing this. Like how?
Okay, wait, I'm sorry. I have a new fact to pepper.
Oh, no.
At the onset of the American Civil War, Hampton-Sydney students formed a company in the Virginia militia. The Hampton-Sydney students did not see much action, but rather were captured and paroled by General George B. McKinley on the condition that they returned to their studies.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, they were Proud Boys.
Yeah, they were literally the original.
Oh my God, yeah.
They were the original Proud Boys. That's amazing.
Oh my God, that's fucking amazing.
Let's go to our next college show.
So just one more thing I want to read now from the Brett Stevens thing is that he closes by just suggesting to the college students that they be more like him, Brett Stevens.
Oh, I'm trying, sir.
He goes, "A month ago, I chose to do my small part in trying to swim against this particular current. After 16 productive and happy years as the conservative writer with the staunchly conservative editorial page..." It's like, dude, they just gave you a big-ass check to do this job. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
This isn't any brave stance on your part that you're doing the same job under a different masthead. And he goes, "But here's my advice for you. Get out of your own safe spaces. Define what your intellectual comfort zone is and leave it. Enhance your tolerance for discordant views. Narrow your criteria for what's beyond the pale. Read authors or watch the talking heads with whom you disagree." Check plus.
I read.
That's all we do on this fucking show.
Yeah, you know, just to expand my horizons, I like to read the NAMBLA newsletter, the Beak.
Yep.
Just, you know, all viewpoints.
"By all means, master the art of being pugnacious in argument, but as pugnacious a dialogian, not a petulant didact. Go beyond that. Befriend your intellectual adversaries. Assume they're smart. Master the civilized art of disagreement." And then he goes on to say, "Have an argument, then have a drink together."
Carl Dinkler shit.
So he's just
so dig.
He's closing out this fucking commencement speech by being like, "Graduates, be more like me, Brett Stevens. And to my opponents, be friends with me. I'm not so bad. Have a drink with every one of these bow-tied, repellent fucking shits and nerds.
Please, someone have a drink with me. I'm very lonely."
To the liberals in the audience, "My mom actually called the principal and you have to hang out with me. You have to come over to the New York Times to have a play date with me."
In conclusion, I'm cold and there are wolves after me.
I just want to say, like, on the pugnacious thing, I think I want to take credit for triggering him into this because... like, you know, when everyone was owning him for his terrible column, I tweeted at him and I said, "You're a twat and shithead," or whatever. And it seems that it's actually a matter of record that really upset him, because I guess some guy from the Daily Beast interviewed him about it and about, you know, the obscenity. I just want to read you his quote. He said, "I guess I'm getting to the age where obscenity bothers me a little more than it did 10 years ago. I'm at that stage of life where it's, you know, kids these days. There was a woman at Gizmodo who just unleashed at me, and I'm like, wow, is there not a filter in your mind when you represent a news organization?" So I just want to say, triggered, bitch.
Young lady. Oh, man, I may have to go back on Twitter. I think if you admit that, like, you know, obscenity, actually, it really bothers me. That's blood in the water,
yeah.
Man.
Ooh. Yeah. Don't tell the bully that you'll wet yourself if they tickle you.
It's very sad because, like, I mean, I have to say, the swears that I did at him weren't even that bad. I called him a shithead, a crybaby, fucking weenie, and a twat. Like, I didn't use the C word. I could have got way more creative. Like, if those are the swear words that offend him, I mean, Jesus Christ, what a fucking old lady.
I would,
Libby, you're at Gizmodo. Leave the C word to us.
I'm gonna use the Reddit, like, Joss Whedon style insults and be like, "You are an epic fuck bucket of shit ass, you mother bitching fuck waffle ass clown." He's the only guy in the world who, when he's called that, is like, "Stop."
But I want to be clear what's going on in this lazy commencement speech article is that he's giving it to literally the most cloistered fucking assholes on the planet who are going to go on to basically play golf and ruin the planet.
Yeah.
Trying to be like Brett Stevens. That's basically why these people exist.
Yeah.
And he's telling them to, like, you know, he's not really talking to them. That's the thing. What he's doing is talking to, like I said, his liberal marks and doing this, "Oh, don't throw me in the briar patch" routine of being like,
holding out the hope that maybe I could come around on global warming or considering Palestinians human beings if, you know, maybe you were only civil enough. No, he won't. He's just getting you to fucking surrender without firing a shot.
Yep.
He's a cunt. Next, the second reading selection that I have is a return to another old favorite, another friend of the show who we've done probably our lengthiest reading series on. Of course, I'm talking about Megan McArdle. How could we have gone this long without...
The Lisa Loeb of libertarianism, as Amber called her.
Absolutely. And this was an article that came out a couple weeks ago that someone sent to me that it absolutely is worth reading. This is Megan's take in Bloomberg about the new Hulu series, The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Headline, no.
Oh, by the way, shout out to Alex Gurevich for sending this to me. Our first fan to admit that he started listening to us after he had a concussion, which actually gives us, I think, the best tagline. We're the podcast for people suffering from traumatic brain injuries.
Yes.
Literally, the medical advice when you have a concussion is try not to think.
The NFL's podcast.
That's also the advice that Megan McArdle gives all her readers. Many of whom who have had large chunks of rebar removed from their skulls recently.
Yeah, that's person who was harmed by an IED blast, the two things they have them do are listen to the Slate Cultural Gab Fest and read Megan McArdle to sort of like reorient them into the world.
So
that's actually the guy who killed Chris Kyle. He had one earbud in listening to the Cultural Gab Fest. It was the episode, what is shade? Who is Rihanna mad at? My biggest fear is that I go home one day and a large man is in my living room and says, this isn't your house anymore because my social anxiety is too bad to call the police. But before we start the Gab Fest, here's an open letter to my mailman who sarcastically called me Big God.
Turn off the Gab Fest now.
Hold on.
No.
So back to Megan McArdle. This is her take on, like I said, the hot new TV series, The Handmaid's Tale, based on the classic novel by Margaret Atwood. Now, keep in mind, again, with Brett Stevens, this is a little Chapo tip, listener. When you approach any one of these opinion columns or figures like Megan McArdle or David Brooks or Ross Douthat, identify the topic that they're addressing, and then try to ask yourself, what's the problem that they're trying to solve with this op-ed? Where are they trying to lead their reader? What issue are they trying to confront? And of course, in Megan's case, her shtick is that she is a hardcore apologist for, you know, just extreme right-wing governance of any kind, doesn't really care much about the social issues as long as, you know, the poor are fed into blast furnaces and she can continue buying fancy kitchen gadgets and get paid six figures a year to write absolute drivel. But the problem for Megan is that there's a sort of, I guess, semi-popular new show that a lot of, you know, media and takes are being written about that seems to connect it to the, sort of hardcore religious fundamentalism and misogyny of the Republican Party.
So, however, I would say I do like the, I'm sorry, we're not in the show. There's no people don't own women yet. It's fine. If you would like to read something good about the sort of like lib hysteria over it, go to Jacobin, read Angela Nagel on the Handmaid's Tale
I think that is
a
good and interesting critique. Megan sort of touches on it, but
Megan is a moron.
Megan is going in a different direction. So I just want to read from her now. We are all necessarily prisoners of our own place and time, and thus I was in my youth necessarily a fan of The Handmaid's Tale. Again, I just want to say necessarily used twice in the first sentence. awful.
That's establishing a rhythm.
Yeah. I read it. I discussed it very earnestly with like-minded friends. I copied author Margaret Atwood's muted style. And no, you didn't. You did not pick up anything from Margaret Atwood. Your style is the exact opposite of muted.
Chump, you could say.
If a dog wrote this article, like someone was like, yeah, my dog could detect all the themes in this show. I would believe it just as much as Megan.
I'm already losing it reading her unbelievably awful prose. So she says, I tried to copy author. No, you, God, sorry. But that use has fled, alas. It has been 2 decades since I last waxed indignant about the drinking age or picked up my copy of the book. Even that copy, paperback, dog-eared and water-stained and threatening to come apart at the spine, has been left behind somewhere, presumably the same place I lost my Velvet Chokers and my Suzanne Vega CDs.
Chokers are cool now, bitch.
Yeah.
I just, like... Okay, first of all, like, the fact that she references her copy of the book, dog-eared, coming apart at the spine, everything she thinks is in cliche. Yeah. That book is not fucking dog-eared and water-stained and coming apart at the seams.
She does what I do, which is whenever people give me books for my birthday or something, I sleep on the books to make them look used so people guess think that I read.
I just put them through the washing machine a couple times and it works pretty good.
My quarrel is not with the politics of The Handmaid's Tale, nor with its realism. Expecting plausibility from dystopian fiction is like expecting haute cuisine from a highway service area.
And that's also like, right, reading the rest of this piece is like one of those caveats where it's like, well, when you realize that, you should have stopped writing this piece because it doesn't work anymore. Like, right. You just said the thing that undermines the whole of the rest of your piece. But
Libby,
fine,
I think you mean Cavite. It's pronounced Cavite, as we learned from
bitch.
Felix.
That was a joke when I did that. I'm an autodidact, so I can't say everything right.
Listen to this. Of the dystopian fiction I've read, only 1984 comes even remotely close to feeling real. That's the worst fucking example. That is the book.
Oh my god!
Like. It was describing the totalitarian conditions of the Soviet Union. The actual future we live in that is dystopian is fucking nothing like 1984.
Yeah, it's more like Brave New World. Yeah, but also, I like that Megan, like...
I don't think she... I think she's confused. I think she probably means Brave New World.
Yeah. She, but you just... She's like every forum poster who's like, two words, 1984, The Animal Farm, by George Orwell. It's the prequel to The Matrix.
So she goes on to talk about how, you know, genre fiction, blah, 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 can be used as a cautionary tale. But her whole point is that The Handmaid's Tale is not a cautionary tale for our present moment. So she goes, reading accounts of those actual regimes, and I think thus far she's referenced Hitler and North Korea, I'm always surprised at how culturally embedded they remained, even as they proclaimed that they were enacting a new world order in which everything would be different. People still got married and settled into family domesticity under communist regimes that were supposedly sweeping away all the vestiges of private lives in favor of creating new Soviet man or his many cousins. People in theocratic states still had a considerable variance in the level of religious observance. Theoretically, internationalist ideologies fell back onto nationalist sentiment to motivate the masses. All of which is to say, the Taliban certainly existed, but it could not exist in America because it would not have no popular base from which to launch its attacks. No historic practice of burqa wearing to ratify bringing them back. The most banal observation imaginable. Just drivel.
Like, I haven't read or seen The Handmaid's Tale. Is it about the Taliban? Like, is it
actually
specifically about the Taliban?
So double check me on this because it's been years since I've read it. But if I remember correctly, this is the part you keep if I'm right. Actually, the terrorist attack was a false flag by domestic right-wingers. They just blamed Muslims.
And then, like, it's like a hyper-nate... It's like... It's sort of like Children of Men, and in the future, like, infertility has gotten, like, is, like, very widespread, and the handmaids are, like...
Yeah, there was a natural biological disaster, and there's, like... You know, there's female slavery, which has existed, but, like, it's also, like, a very unified political theocracy... It's not a thing that has been.
This sounds like my speculative fiction future book. I don't have anything in it except for the main villain is it's a woman who's a judge, and she's bad, and she's her last name is Justice, so they're like, Miss Justice. That's all I have, and it's 900 pages of people calling her that.
Megan talks earlier about how, like, ooh, in Atwood's Gilead, like, it actually, there aren't one-to-one comparisons between, like, a straight Christian theocracy because they use images of, like, prayer wheels or whatever. And I like in her mind, like, in the sort of right-wing speculative fiction, she's, like, sort of surprised that, like, actual authors, when they create, like, another world or alternate history to our own, like, aren't just blatant hacks who just pick literal things from the present moment to
they can actually make things up.
So she's amazed by that. And in doing a little research for this, I came across Megan McArdle, science fiction author.
What?
On a latest on her latest Reddit AMA, she says she is taking time off to write a science fiction novel completely on spec and may publish it herself.
I cannot wait.
She is also no stranger to sort of just, as she mentioned, she has a childhood interest in dystopian fiction. Listen to this from the same Reddit AMA. A couple of decades ago, this is McArdle writing, I toyed with the idea of writing a novel where the U.S. broke up into two countries, liberal Stan and fundamentalist Stan.
Why would they call themselves by like a Central Asian?
Yeah, it would be liberal Vakia.
Yeah.
And would it shock you to find out that Megan has some even more interesting thoughts actually about Nazi Germany?
Okay,
let's dive into this.
This is the best part, yeah.
Yeah. She quotes from the book now. The inciting event is a lightly fictionalized version of the Reichstag fire, as you pointed out. But a careful student of history would note that a decade after the Reichstag fire, most of German society still looked pretty much like it had in 1925.
Well, no, for some people.
No, what? I'm not excusing Nazi atrocities in any way, shape, or form.
Already going
that's
great.
That's how you know you got a good column is when you're writing that.
Why didn't you just?
You should definitely have to include that caveat in there.
The delete key is right there, and she just, but she can't stop once she started a paragraph.
That's like, the
already apologizing for her paragraph.
And she goes, nor am I discounting the sweeping changes that Hitler did make. Again, completely contradicting what you just said.
This is the middle of my Tinder profile. By the way. I'm not excusing Hitler. I have nothing to do with Columbine. But
they didn't gut renovate the economy, wipe out all religions that competed with the state, and completely reorganize society in the space of a few years. They left much of the economy and the culture alone. For structural reasons, she needs her handmaid to remember the world before, blah, blah, blah. She's like doing logic.
Yeah, nothing about, like, of course, she's a libertarian, so like the fact that unions were abolished has, right. Like, oh, that's not real politics.
Like if Meghan McArdle was like the time-traveling libertarian who experienced the fall of like German democracy and the rise of Adolf Hitler, she'd be like, I can notice very little different. In fact,
is this 1932?
Also, though, she's talking about Hitler's Germany. What if she considered the other places Hitler went?
Right.
And were they slightly different afterwards?
She goes back and sees Auschwitz, and she's like, this is horrible. I had no idea that Hitler did this. Had a totally state-owned factory.
Yeah, she looks at the Warsaw Ghetto and never mind. I'm not even.
She's
gonna go
yeah.
There.
She looks at the Warsaw Ghetto and she's like,
"Okay, you
these
do
are
it.
All rent controlled."
I know. I was gonna do it, but I'm glad you did.
I am your shield.
So I just love when you know, libertarians stay in your lane, and by stay in your lane, I mean just talk about gadgets.
I mean, pave your own fucking lane in the middle of the woods.
Pave your own lane, stay in it, and by stay in it, I mean write about gadgets, the way service employees inconvenience you, how they should be disciplined more harshly by their bosses. And by out of your lane, I mean confronting any of human history or any of like the complex existential questions raised by historical atrocities. You're just not prepared to deal with it. I'm
also,
sorry.
Also, you know what? Literature? Skip it.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of this god-awful column, though, there's a footnote, and this is what Meghan McArdle, author of The Upside of Down, has to say about a fucking genius like Margaret Atwood. I should say that upon rereading, I found The Handmaid's Tale somewhat diminished, as often happens with serious books we loved at a tender age. Somehow children's books do not suffer this depreciation. In some ways, I enjoy the Oz books and Narnia more than I did at 10. Thanks for including that, Megan. Margaret Atwood's sentences are beautiful, her grasp of interior monologue sharp, but it is a book about the tedium of a passive life under oppression.
These days, I prefer Hop on Pop, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. I have a whole new appreciation for them.
And she has captured her subject too well. When you know what is going to happen, the tension that animated reading it is gone and was somewhat of a chore to plow through the acres of wan character sketches and fallow meditation that lie between the sparse moments of action. Again, Meghan McArdle, author of The Upside of Down, a book about why failure is success and an aborted book about liberal Stan and fundamentalia.
I'm going to back her up, though, that sometimes when I've read a book before, I do feel like I know what's going to happen because for some reason it's apparent to me.
Yeah.
I think she's right about that.
It's true. Yeah. What? Sometimes it's like...
And no one's talking about that.
That's why, like, when you're an adult, like, you graduate from children's books like that, you read Choose Your Own Adventure books because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yes. Well, Choose Your Own Adventure books are actually perfect for libertarians because it puts people in dire situations and then gives you
rational choice.
Also, it lets you
choose
and you're like, nope, and go backwards.
Time for some game theory.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, here are your choices. Continue to work at a factory where you inhale toxic asbestos every day, or quit and have your family starve. Yeah. You only have only two
start
options.
Your own business.
Start your own business. Yeah,
it's the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Choose your own adventure.
Okay, so that's Megan on a popular culture. Please kill me. Are you guys ready for one last reading series?
Let's do it.
Let's knock it out. All right,
holy
gang.
God, though, can we order hamburgers after?
Oh, I'm so hungry.
We got our energy up. We got our dander up, and this one is sure to do it again. The last reading series for this week is titled, it's published in The Hill, titled, Why the Radical Center Must Be the Future of American Politics.
Hell yeah, dude.
This is by Democratic politician Dave Anderson. Dave Anderson was a candidate. He was a candidate in the 2016 Democratic primary in Maryland's 8th Congress. So he's like, hey, I lost. Listen to my point of view about how the radical center is the future of the Democratic Party. It begins. The election of Emmanuel Macron to the presidency of France means different things to different people. To Democrats, the United States, and those who opposed Brexit, it means a victory against the forces of change that brought about Brexit and the Trump presidency. But to others, Macron's victory in France signals an era in which men can marry women much older than them and have just open, sexy relationships with their teachers and mentors.
In conclusion, France is a country of contrast.
Now, he goes on and goes about, an establishment, liberals, and establishment conservatives in the name of a new center, not a moderate center associated with the United States and the United Kingdom, third way politics, but what has been described as Macron's radical center point of view. Okay, so he introduces the concept of a radical center. Let's see if he'll define at all what will be the policies of this radical center.
Keep in mind, Macron described his politics as neither left nor right.
That's the radical center.
Hey, kids, always recycle.
To the extreme! Busted!
It's like the neutral planet from Futurama.
Those in the radical center, and there are American thinkers who have used this phrase, shy away from adopting moderate policies. They shy away from moderate policies, which represent a compromise between left and right. The radical center aims to be more ambitious than the moderate center. Indeed, the radical center does not regard itself as a centrist position at all. It doesn't really sit between left and right on the old Congress of Vienna, left and right half circle. The radical center, that name again, the radical center, transcends left and right, but takes important elements of both sides.
Both sides.
World star. In the United States, we need candidates for Congress and the presidency and governor and state legislature who also occupy the radical center. That name again, the radical center. Has your brain melted yet? But the language of radical center does not play well in the United States.
It's playing great right now.
Was this piece edited?
It's
no,
The Hill.
I can say pretty confidently, The Hill publishes so much fucking garbage. There's no way it was edited. They just
put
it up.
Real...
It's like Medium for twats.
The Hill published one of my favorite articles ever, the one that Michael Flynn got paid $500,000 to write about how we should extradite Gulen.
Oh.
Therefore, the time has come to build a radical center. It campaigns. Language is of the first importance to politics. Whether you are Winston Churchill sustaining the British people during the Battle of Britain, Franklin Roosevelt inspiring citizens during the Great Depression, or Donald Trump tweeting to followers in the 2016 race for president. And although millions of Americans demonstrated an appetite for socialist candidate for president in 2016, namely Bernie Sanders, we are not ready for a candidate that is radical in any sense of the term. Do you guys follow any of this?
No.
that we should be supporting the radical.
Well, Bernie Sanders is not the radical center. He's just radical.
Yeah, but he says we can't handle radical.
So we need the radical center.
Awful.
They call themselves radical.
Well, this is the problem. And he says, I nominate a few names for this new point of view, but others should chime in. The new American center, the ambitious center, the 21st century center,
and the project for a new American century.
And my favorite, the common sense center. Don't every one of these just roll off
there's
the tongue?
There's no ideology.
The good center. The
creamy center.
There's no real... It's all about... It's the same bullshit. It's all about, okay, there isn't left and right. There's just problems that need to be solved by reasonable people.
Feeling like Fournier.
Yeah.
Feeling like Ron.
I mean, like, this guy is biting Ron's style.
Yeah,
so
this
hard.
Is really, really
but
pathetic.
He lacks
any
of Ron's
I just
soul.
Looked at it. He uses the phrase radical center 14 times.
Wow. That's the 14 words. Wow. And we must secure an existence for the future of our balanced budget.
It's also only 700 words, and there's a typo in the first 5 words. He missed the N in Madden.
Hell yeah, dude.
Wait, Libby, what's the typo?
Well, I think that's right. I think he missed... I think he misspelled Macron. Hang on. Yeah, he forgot the N in Emmanuel Macron.
Emmanuel
it just
Macron.
Says Emmanuel Macron. Okay. God, lost my place here. I'll just search Radical Center and find the 10th reference of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, here we go. The new center can defend the kind of policy that I myself ran on in the Democratic primary in Maryland's 8th Congressional District in 2016. Namely, one that provided hardworking young middle-class families with a choice. Once a baby is born, here's your choice. 6 months of paid parental leave plus 3 years of child care support at $10,000 a year, or 6 months of paid parental leave plus 3 years of a tax credit for a stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad at the levels of $10,000 a year, and that includes families with two moms or two dads. Can anyone tell me what that actual distinction is? So tax credits or something?
I can't believe he didn't win.
I don't know. I just got a nosebleed, blacked out.
I can't believe he didn't win.
Not only did he not win, I don't know if you guys had pulled this up already, but his... In that primary election, he got 1.2%.
Oh my God.
Listen up.
Listen up, people. This is a bold, popular policy that 1% of voters in Maryland's Democratic primary can get behind.
Yeah, he came in 7th place.
So he goes, this family policy is a radical center policy, even though I did not call it that because it would not have sounded appealing to the people of Frederick and Carroll counties in Maryland where I targeted my race. But that's what it was. Macron and his followers can talk about the radical center because people talk that way in France. They don't talk that way
this
here.
Is kind of deranged.
Talk that way.
Actually, yeah, they don't. First of all,
no one.
First of all, they speak French.
Yeah, they say le centre radical.
My God, is that Meghan McCardle's music out here?
this guy.
Also, like, I mean, you know, the French race was highly contested, and also the almost Nazi, like, the Nazi almost won.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not sure if your whole, the only way we can fight an extreme right thing. I mean, it was upsettingly close. It was far too close.
Also, Macron is appointing all these conservative cabinet
members. Yeah, because he's
members.
Trying to fucking... Yeah.
That's radical. It's radical.
Yeah, yeah.
What we need is the radical center.
Yeah.
This point of view speaks to millions of Americans, many of whom vote Republican and Democrat today. Yeah, there are millions of Americans who vote for both the Republican and
Democrat. Was this one of those kind of gimmicky candidacies where it was a 7-year-old who ran? Because this is not written like an adult.
who do not identify with the far right of the Republican Party or the far left of the Democratic Party. They currently sit in the middle, and many are independents.
Furthermore, this is the Zodiac speaking.
I want to watch the extremist liberals and conservatives as they come bouncing out.
I love balancing budgets and expanding NATO. It's more fun than getting my rocks off with a girl or boy. I do both.
I look forward to the day when centrists are not referred to as pigs.
Oh, yeah.
You see why I chose this piece? Because actually reading it is giving me brain damage.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read all of it.
And then we're
almost
Ricardo.
Done.
Yeah,
we're almost done.
Goes on for another 14,000 words.
This is a 3-part episode, yeah, everybody. So thanks for subscribing.
This is like the I'm reading The Great Gatsby now. This is my you know, this is my Andy, are you goofing on Elvis moment.
Most American lives have 3 deficits.
They are waiting for these millions of people. They are waiting for someone to articulate the values and policies of the radical center, which admittedly leans more towards the Democrats than the Republicans. It's time the Republicans. It's time to articulate those values and policies, but it is necessary to drop the phrase radical center and find a new one. Whether this point of view can be embraced by the Democratic Party needs an outsider or outsiders of the Democratic Party. Only time will tell.
I think I realized.
Wait a minute, bold. Not bold, moderate, but radically moderate, but not radical outsider.
There is a Manchurian radical candidate who, by hearing the phrase, is now going to kill
Tom Perez is the kindest, bravest, warmest man I've ever met. This point of view is an option for Kathleen Matthews, chairwoman of the Democratic Party in Maryland, and Montgomery County's Tom Perez, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. This radical center point of view, renamed, will be opposed to the Trump point of view, but it will be built on the anti-establishment theme of the Trump administration. Whoa. Dave Anderson was a candidate in the 2016 Democratic primary in Maryland's 8th Congressional District. That phrase again, the radical center. That's the piece I have. I have brain damage now.
Sometimes the most radical thing you can do is to not be radical at all and play by the rules.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Sip to the square. Yeah.
Libby, did you describe the Hill as medium for twats?
Yeah, well, I want to be more specific. It's like it's medium for lanyard twats. Like, obviously, there's plenty of twats
on medium.
It's specifically medium for like the worst people in DC. I think I stole that from Brendan O'Connor, by the way.
shout out.
Medium, like, or The Hill, like, if that New York Times fridge guy, the insufferable twat on Twitter, who basically pretends to be Jeff Newsroom from the newsroom, but also
a there's already a fucking account that does that.
Yeah. He would, like, if he lived in D.C., like, he would have a regular column in The Hill. Like, that's the kind of asshole that they run.
Oh, my God.
Except for this guy. This was pretty cool as far as Hill articles go, because this guy was having an active breakdown.
He was
conceptual.
He was suffering from aphasia as he was writing.
You're right, Felix. That was very Zodiac. Yeah. Like, just the repetition and the kind of broken up sentence. You know, you guys can't see it who are listening, but
Will got very animated. Yeah.
The also, just like the Zodiac, the comic misspellings of names and words.
There's also a typo in the last sentence, by the way. I don't mean to edit him, but he said,
does
it
say Christ Mass instead of Christmas?
How embarrassing.
Okay, guys. Libby, thank you so much for being with us today, for bearing with all three of that powerful trifecta of god-awful readings.
Ooh. We will pay for the medical bills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've made everyone... We've given everyone brain damage. Most of all,
can't
myself.
Can't damage this one anymore,
however, before we close out this week's show, I do... not want to let it go without passing the one truly good and worthwhile thing that happened this week, which was the release of Chelsea Manning from prison.
Hell yeah.
And I don't know if you saw her 2 first Instagram posts, but as I mentioned, seeing the Converse All-Stars and seeing that slice of pizza vastly outweighed all of the mind-rendingly inane, awful, and stupid things that I've read on this show this year. Chelsea, we wish you the best. Welcome home. Like I said, I feel nothing but hope and joy at just seeing those 2 photos of her free and out and living her life the way she wants to. And I hope that she will continue to be a presence in our sort of public life and continue to write and comment and, you know, just live her life.
Well, so this wouldn't be Chapo if we didn't say fuck you to everybody who didn't want her out, who piled on her over the years, particularly that douchebag who works at the Daily Beast. What's his name?
All of them?
Yeah, basically all of them.
Yeah,
there was
pretty
one
much
guy
any
who
of them, yeah.
There was one guy who was at the Guardian at the same
ben
time.
Ben C. Jacobs.
Her. Yeah, Ben C. Jacobs. Fuck you, Ben
oh,
C.
Yeah,
Jacobs. He once made fun of her, saying that it was playing the world's smallest violin, that she couldn't you know, not be tortured in prison. And he ended up having to apologize to her because his bosses got mad at him because he's an absolute fucking twat, and also that was a horrible thing to say. So people like Ben C. Jacobs, fuck you.
Fuck you, Oliver
fuck
Willis.
Oliver Honeybun Willis.
Yeah.
Yep. Matters.
Joanne Reed,
yeah.
who said prison is supposed to be uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, again, as he was being like tortured and driven insane, driven to suicide.
Long live Chelsea and fuck all of those
and,
people.
Yeah, and
may
also,
she outlive all of them.
Once again, Jamie Kirchick wrote an article
fuck
saying
you,
that
dolphin
she deserves
teeth.
To be put to death for her treason. Jamie, you look just like Jared Fogle. Google it.
Look it up. Yeah.
Jamie Kirchick, new album dropping this fall, feeling like Fogle.
Feeling like Fogle.
No,
in the
no,
back
look,
of the
looking like Fogle.
Looking like Fogle in the back of the aircraft carrier.
Fuck all of you.
Die.
Yeah. And Libby, thanks so much for joining us. I think we should call this episode the Twat episode.
Yeah. It's,
nice. Yeah, let's do it.
Twatcast.
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 Bye, everybody.
Twatcast, yeah.
Bye.
Bye, Libby. Thanks.
Thank you, Libby.
Thanks, Libby.
Sure.